Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. Happy Friday, brother.
Yeah, it is a happy Friday. It's always nice to hit Friday, but the weather is not playing ball with that Friday feeling.
That's fine. We're going to have a turn for the better. I can feel it.
When it's wet and rainy, Irish people talk about
The homeland.
Tis a grand soft day.
This should be fun. We are here today.
Is it? Will it
gathered
be?
Together, dearly beloved, to look back on yesterday's U.S.-Ecuador match. I showed signs of real, true professional growth by watching it, which ordinarily I love doing, even U.S. friendlies, but it's March Madness, and most people who listen to this know how much I do love college basketball, and Syracuse played last night.
Yeah.
Now, granted, the times didn't directly overlap, but I do need hours and hours of preparation before a March Madness-Syracuse game.
Well, you'd be happy to know that I watched both games in full.
Oh, Coach Oldman.
Yeah, Coach Oldman was there.
Didn't go well.
Did not go well.
Fitting end to a very forgettable season.
Rebounding was poor.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to call or compare Syracuse to a professional soccer team, who would they be?
Let's see. Who is known for a unique style of defending? When I say that, who's a team that would jump to mind?
I mean, anyone managed by Mourinho. That's not unique. That's more.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
There's so many different ways to look at that. Kind of, I suppose. We could say Stoke City in the Pulis era.
That's a little bit unfair, though. Syracuse.
They
I don't know. So you embrace this time of year, like you really enjoy March Madness.
It's fantastic. It's college sport, which is fun. You know, I enjoy that.
Yeah.
I go on my regular college football trip every year. It's exciting, and it's nicely compact and compressed, and there's always drama.
Yeah.
So.
It's the best. I do love it. But, like I said, I did watch the U.S. and Ecuador last night. It ends 1-0 thanks to, I mean, as far as 1-0 games go, like, the goal that was scored, it was just like a goal that happened.
It was
kind of a game that happened. Not that there weren't a number of takeaways, and we're going to go through all of them.
There's things to talk about, but it was far from a classic. We'll put it that
true.
Way.
True, that is very true.
A lot of the responses, so I did a one-word response thing on Twitter with some of our listeners, and there was a lot of meh. There was a lot
that's fair.
There was a lot of, ugh, boring. But there was things to be taken from it, and I'll kick everything off by saying I'm delighted that we are sitting here talking about a U.S. men's national team coach who was using a friendly to try things and also who has a clearly defined tactical approach. I've always said this. I never felt that happened under Bruce Arena, except on maybe one occasion, which was Mexico away. And I never felt that happened at all under Klinsmann in any coherent fashion. Work on the field, work in camp, transferring itself to the actual game day. And I believe that happened last night. And that, to me, is massive positive.
Yeah.
A man does his job. Stop the press.
A man, a plan, a canal, Panama. And I'm glad that is your takeaway from this, because I do feel like so often after U.S. friendlies, especially one against a team like Ecuador, who, while good, did not have necessarily their A squad last night.
And
although, now, Antonio Valencia played, which I think people were probably like, oh, that's cool.
That's probably good for him, because where else is he playing?
But Enner Valencia did not. Jefferson Montero did not.
And their coach, who was the coach of the Panamanian team that came and got thumped at that very same ground.
Yeah.
Which,
a night that ended in glorious fireworks.
Yeah, will we ever forget? We're going and proclamations that we're going to be there from Tim Howard. Remember him afterwards, how bullish he was?
Why must we do this?
We must do this. It's called cleansing.
Oh my God, we've cleansed like 1,000 times on this podcast.
No, we must continue.
We have to continue.
The ablutions will never end. But that was the same coach that got whacked 4-0.
Yeah.
He was determined to make sure that would not happen again.
Right, he really was. But I'm glad that this is your takeaway, because so often we do these podcasts after U.S. friendlies and we just get told by people on Twitter, oh, but what, you know, okay, fine, we did this against Ecuador's B team. Or, you know, fine, we did this against Costa Rica's C team. Well, like, yeah, this is who we're playing. Who else do we have to judge our performances against? We're not going to play France's A squad every single game in a World Cup tune-up like we did several
Andrew,
months ago.
Oh, Andrew, you are not on the ESPN script. Taylor Twellman, who we love, I mean, he went on a flight of fancy yesterday. He was, you know, the way he always does his paradigm. Can they make the step up from club play to the international level? Mm-hmm. That's his stock phrase, the international level. And instead of talking about, you know, the Jefferson Monteros of this world, or perhaps the Brian Ruizes of this world, which is probably more accurate, the guys you're going to be facing. He was talking about Kevin De Bruyne, you know.
He was big. Yeah, Belgium was a major theme running through last night.
Yeah, because he was concerned about, rightly so, about Tyler Adams slotting into the midfield and being an extra body in there, which is great, mm-hmm. and being a forward presence, but then having to get back. And so he made the valid point that, well, what if that happens against really top quality opposition? I was like, slow down there, Sonny Jim.
Yeah, I just think that
pull it back. We're talking about getting out of CONCACAF. That is what we need to focus on.
Right. It's so true.
If we get into a group in a World Cup with Belgium in it, I'm telling you, that is the gravy. That's the gravy. We're not there yet.
Not everything that happens in a US friendly needs to be looked at through that lens. It's just not fair. And by the way, like, when Belgium does something, they're not saying, like, oh, what happens when we face the U.S.? Like, we're not in the same category.
No, absolutely
right now.
Not.
So, like, for everything we do to be comparing to, like, Brazil and England and Belgium, it's just not where this team is yet. So I think people need to pump the brakes a little bit on that. And when they do something well against an Ecuador B team, then, like, you're allowed to say that was a good thing that happened. Not every comment made needs to come with the caveat of, well, what about if it's against Belgium?
But we can't
keep doing that.
Let's go to Costa Rica and get a point or, hey, get a win. Let's just pull it back in. We're going to have Gold Cup opposition, and then we're going to have Gold Cup opposition in qualifying.
Yeah.
Don't be talking about anybody else.
We're not there yet. We're certainly not there yet. But having said that, I do think that there were positive takeaways to come from last night's game. For me, mainly in the first half. Which is kind of interesting because the goal came in the second half.
But let's be honest, in friendlies, the minute you start making mass substitutions, it changes the rhythm and the flow. And the first half is where we take most of our instruction as to how this worked out tactically for Bearhalter.
Yeah, straight out of the gate, third minute, another thing that turned into a theme for last night, you had a great kind of diagonal long ball from Will Trapp to Paul Areola, which I thought we saw time and time again throughout the course of that game, and I would say time and time again, it was deadly accurate. And I actually came away, you know, fairly impressed by Will Trapp and some of his distribution last night.
Well, it's not a wonder that Will Trapp struggled as an orthodox holding mid in the U.S. teams before under Dave Sarakin, and then all of a sudden, his mentor Bearhalter comes in, and he's accustomed to this style of play. I would pull you up, though. Mm-hmm. What I noticed was that was one great ball across towards that left-hand side with Tim Ream on it and with Areola. But honestly, Andrew, the weight of passes and the most incision did come down the right because it seemed to me a little bit unbalanced. You've got Ream playing at left-back and Areola on that side. So Tim Ream is not going to get forward. He's not charged with the same job as Tyler Adam. And so what was interesting to me was clearly what Bearhalter was trying to do was to create numbers up in midfield and when that switch is on to get it out to Jordan Morris or whatever, get it out to Jordan Morris. And what was really interesting in an orthodox, we'd say 4-4-2. We'll just take 4-4-2 as an example. Tyler Adam, if he's playing right back, he is going to be overlapping, going outside of Jordan Morris to receive the ball.
This is the opposite.
Inside movements and runs, which really hurt Ecuador. And we had that moment, I think it was 25th minute, where you had McKenny was charged with I mean, you're right in saying Will Trapp was passing, but the runs and license were given by McKenny to get forward. So it was McKenny into Zardes, back to McKenny, into Pulisic, into Areola, and then saved by Dominguez.
Yeah.
All one-touch stuff. That was fabulous. And the speed of play and everything about that move is exactly what Bearhalter would have looked for. But again, he was frustrated time and again, really, because the opposition didn't want to come out and play. They played in that low block. So chances really were few and far between. Areola should score there.
But yeah, he absolutely should have. And one thing that I thought was also encouraging was that, you know, Greg Bearhalter has spoken a lot about wanting to play, you know, a more possession-based style for the U.S. they obviously did that. Now, part of that was because Ecuador had just no interest in really being a part of the game last
night. Zero shots on target.
Yeah. Now, they did have a couple moments, which we can talk about in a bit. But,
yeah.
You know, the one thing, it's not just that the U.S. maintained possession in this game. I thought they were fairly dynamic in the way they went about it. Like, for example, you just listed that kind of intricate passing.
That was good.
You know, close quarters. I mentioned before the Will Trapp long ball to Areola, which we saw several times. And then there were balls, you know, shortly after what you just mentioned in the 30th minute. More good passing, good spacing. McKenny put the ball out wide to Jordan Morris, who, remember, played in a really nice ball to Zardes, who whiffed on it. But then Areola was there at the far post to score, but Morris ended up being ruled offside. We looked at the replay a couple times. I still don't know that he was. It was really close.
No, but it was a nice move.
Yeah, but nevertheless, it just felt like the U.S. were able to find ways forward in like a multitude of different ways to go about it.
I think so too. Pulisic was closely marked, which we kind of expected that was going to happen. He still managed a few nice touches. What's interesting for me is the growing pains with this. Like, Jordan Morris is clearly not 100% comfortable with having someone coming into the lanes that he would probably like to occupy himself. And there's a couple of times where he didn't realize that you have in that formation a obligation to be really on it defensively. And I think it was right before halftime where we saw Tyler Adams in the midfield tracking back. He was getting back and he was coming out to do his defending duties.
32nd minute if you and I are on the same page.
Yeah. And Morris comes into it and he just switches off.
Total ball watching.
Completely does not see the runner and I think it was slid into the Ecuadorian and that was their best chance of the game.
Yeah.
So there is growing pains there. There's also a question that I'd like to put to you that I clearly can see that Tyler Adams can play this role. Like, he can do it. He's got the engine to be that covering fullback when they're without the ball and also to be that extra body in midfield and make those runs forward. He can get up and down. Mm-hmm. But also, he is but a boy. He is also flesh and bone. And you saw in the 46th minute that run by Romario Ibarra, straight from halftime, clearly, the Ecuadorians talked at halftime and said, look, he's bombing forward and he's getting into the midfield. There are gaps there, right? So what happened? Almost a straight run. He's struggling to get back into the hole. Naturally, over the course of the game, he's going to get tired. There's going to be need to be a plan B. And maybe we're just better off playing him as an orthodox box-to-box midfielder or a midfielder who gets around.
Well, maybe. But look, Greg Berhalter has something in mind, so I do want to see more of it. Now, one thing, the other side of that was, so what happens now with DeAndre Yedlin? He did come on as a sub last night, but I don't really feel like we got a good sense just yet of how he's going to do in that spot.
Is it crazy to think that he could possibly play where Morris was?
Oh, my. Way up in attack.
Is it crazy? We're having this debate right now with the Republic of Ireland about Matt Doherty, who plays as a wing back for Wolves, but would naturally be a fullback. You know, they're good enough. They play at a high enough level. Why can't they do this? They're well enough coached. Maybe Yedlin can do it.
Maybe he can, but I don't know. Let's take baby steps. Like, you're talking about going from fullback to like straight up attacker. Let's move to the midfield.
Well, no, wide in what would be, I suppose, a three.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not there yet.
But I'm certainly not there that Jordan Morris has locked down that role for himself.
No, he hasn't. I don't think. Look, if that was a Gold Cup match or a World Cup match last night, I don't believe Jordan Morris would have been in that spot. I don't know who would. I still think that there's questions about the U.S. in attack. And I don't know, like, I so badly ultimately want that spot to kind of be occupied by, like, a Tim Weah.
Right.
And maybe we'll learn more about that this summer. You know, there were a lot of guys missing last night, obviously. Sargent, Weah, guys who a lot of American fans, like, hold dearly right now in this whole rebuilding project. So it wasn't exactly a full squad. Jozy Altidor, they talked about him last night and said, look, if this is a game of real consequence, he's your number nine right now. And until someone clearly emerges and supplants him, I know it's not a thing that a lot of American fans want to hear, but I think that's true. I do think that he is still probably...
Tim Zardes, in terms of domestic goal scoring...
Well, and Giassi Zardes scored his first goal last night for the U.S. since... What was it? I had it written down here. His last goal for the U.S. was also against Ecuador in the Copa America Centenario. I mean, he's played a decent amount.
Almost 3 years. Wow.
Yeah. And, but I mean, it's hardly a thing of beauty. Now, he had a moment in the second half, you know, where a thing that he's starting to show a little bit more of, back to goal. People have wondered, can he play like that in that role? And he did. He had one moment, his back was to goal. He kind of held up play and then laid it off, I think, to Pulisic, who then stumbled and went to ground.
It was so, I mean, his ability to do that has been questioned so much that it was even noted by the commentators last night. I think it it was Twellman that mentioned, you know, can this is something we need to see. Can he do on a consistent basis? It really is Zardes and Altidore. And also age and the fact he doesn't start regularly for his club puts Tim Weah down the pecking order a little bit to start off. But honestly, if you see how polished the finisher he is for Glasgow Celtic in the last few months...
Well, he's been a super sub for them, and I think he's endeared himself to that fan base really fast.
Yeah, certainly, and he can finish. We've seen that in the brief chances he's had with PSG, and certainly the chances he had for the US men's national team, and now Celtic.
I'm just trying to think of the potential speed. If you had a right side for the US, Weah up front, Yedlin in on the wing, in the midfield, and Adams in the back. I mean, boy, that... The speed just down that right side, you feel like could just wreak havoc.
Even in terms of transition and counterattacking, you're right. What's interesting for me for Weah is, like, would you be looking, instead of a fellow who's going to drop off, link the play with his back to goal, is he going to be someone that's playing off the shoulder of a defender, looking for the space in behind? That's another question that remains to be answered about this. But look, I'm enthusiastic. I am genuinely enthusiastic. And Berhalter doesn't have a resume that screams to me that, you know, proper football man JJ, I'm usually quite reserved about a guy whose managerial career has been entirely within the American domestic game. But I just like the way he's going about coaching this team.
Yeah, one thing in particular with that, in the lead up to last night's game, you continue to hear, because this was Pulisic's first chance to really kind of like dive in and be a part of the new Greg Berhalter era. And he seemed to mimic all of the things that we had heard from players back at the January camp that spoke glowingly about Berhalter and his ability to kind of like get across his plan, his detail, his attention to detail, and just like his ability to communicate that.
WhatsApp groups with videos of Ecuador, like genuine homework.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to be for lack of preparation that a Greg Berhalter team fails.
Well, that's the thing, is because like, after the Klinsmann era ended, it just felt like we were awash with gripes from former players saying we didn't know what we were doing out there. There was no direction. You know, it was kind of left to like Michael Bradley to just like bark out orders at people on the field.
We saw it against Mexico and Columbus that night. I mean, there was no WhatsApp group going into that about how to play three at the back.
And it feels like that sort of like, who knows? There are other issues I'm sure will emerge. But in terms of what are we doing out here, like, which should be the most basic of philosophies heading into any game, under Greg Berhalter, that is a thing of the past. That is not something that's going to happen. And that, look, it seems like that should be a natural, but I don't know, the way that the players seem to be embracing it, I think that's important. And I think that's a good early sign for him in terms of how this team is going to embrace him.
I'd also like to say that this level of detail is what most club managers are doing now in the modern game, or a lot of club managers are doing. You know, the days of the team talk beforehand, setting out your stall. I mean, we had Martin O'Neill for 4 or 5 years at Ireland announcing teams an hour before kickoff. Mm-hmm. You can't, oh, hey, you're suddenly in the team. That stuff is gone. It's finished. It's out with the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
So it's really good that Berhalter is ushering in a new era of, dare I say it, professionalism. And I'm not having a...
Bruce Arena is professional.
Super successful, absolutely. I'm not, but a different way of doing things.
Yeah, and I think you're right. It is refreshing. Here was Taylor Twellman after the game with his thoughts.
While tonight was the official reboot of the United States men's national team with Greg Berhalter, the new manager, now with a full squad of players, Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, and Tyler Adams starting in the 11 for the first time ever, not sure there was a lot to be gained in this game. Ecuador came in, sat in, defended, had no business trying to win the game whatsoever. So while the United States was the better team, to make any overarching statement here, that's difficult. I think we'll learn more about the United States Tuesday night in Houston as they take on Chile. But what we did see is that Greg Berhalter is going to throw a few wrinkles into his 11 and try to identify what that style is for the United States men's national team.
I would say I kind of half and half agree with some of what Taylor is saying there. I do think...
You can't call it a reboot and then say you learned nothing.
Right. And I would disagree with that. I don't think you can say that we learned nothing because the U.S. were attacking for a lot of that game. And so in seeing them do that, I do think you learn a little bit about how they want to do that. The aspect of it where I do agree you learn nothing, I don't know what there is to really be said for the back line and especially for Sean Johnson in net. I mean, you talk about a guy who did nothing last night. He did nothing.
And I'm a man who's watched him regularly. He plays in this region.
You're very skeptical.
I'm highly skeptical.
Soon as I saw his name announced as the starting keeper, I was like, I wonder what JJ is thinking about that right at this very moment.
And it's nothing personal. He's a perfectly nice...
I would hope not.
Oh my God, he's a perfectly nice man. No, but I do regularly bring it up. So I just
wanna, I know. So, yeah.
Paul Carr tweeted this, as he is his wont. We need stats at times like this. And I think this illustrates exactly how Ecuador had decided that they would be, how shall we put it, quite conservative in their approach. John Brooks completed 104 completed passes last night, the most by a U.S. men's national team player in a game since Michael Bradley, 141, versus St. Vincent and the Grenadine Islands in November 2015. That was at the start of World Cup qualifying cycle.
Is it bad that John Brooks completed that many passes and I honestly don't know if I can remember a single one of them?
It's not bad, but it goes to show you he was, how shall we put it, not pressured. He was not under any duress. No. It was quite simple, and it does give you a measure of the game. By the way, when the substitutes came on, my mind wandered.
We know how that can happen.
Yeah.
Is there tank rolling by me right now in the background?
No. I kept hearing Ecuador, and all I could think of was a song from my childhood.
Familiar with this?
Oh yes, the days when electronic and dance music were just king.
EDM is what we refer to it as.
Well, now we do. In 1996 or 97, Sash, a French DJ who had one great big hit and then kind of stretched it over a couple of albums and made a lot of money.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, 30 million views on YouTube there for Ecuador. And it was just a man shouting Ecuador.
One of my favorite songs.
Yeah, but that was what was going on in my head midway through the second half.
Yeah, with the defending, like I said, I don't think you can really say anyone had a bad game. I think there's kind of maybe just a lot of sort of like incompletes.
But if I was to ask you, do you want to see Tim Ream at fullback against an attacking side? I'm not saying a top level side, against a team that's going to push their wingers against him and have Paul Ariola bombing forward, leaving him exposed.
No,
you don't want to see that.
No, and I don't. Honestly, I don't think we will. Like I said, when we talked about this squad and what Berhalter's trying to do, I really do think, like him giving the captain's armband to Tim Ream last night, I really do think he's trying to identify guys who are leaders, who can kind of like instill that in some of this younger generation that is now coming up. And I think Tim Ream is probably a good example to set forth. So I'm fine with him playing in some of these situations, in some of these friendlies. I got no problem with that.
No, it's not about him playing. It's positionally. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. John Brooks, I think we all, for the most part, I know he's had his moments against Costa Rica, but for the most part, he's somebody that we all pretty much trust as one of the first team center backs for the U.S. Aaron Long is getting a real look.
That's a takeaway I wanted to focus on. Aaron Long's 1v1 defending, his ability to come out of the center and win the ball and look solid is very good. And you're wondering, are other people paying attention? Are other clubs paying attention? Is anybody in Europe paying attention to this? Because, I don't know, he's come into this side, and even like week to week with the Red Bulls, he's good.
Yeah, he certainly is. And, you like to see somebody get a chance the way that he is, who, we've talked about his path from the lower leagues here in the U.S. to MLS, and now to where he's at, getting kind of regular looks from Greg Berhalter in the U.S. men. So I think it's great. And you're right, he is making the most of the opportunity.
Can we quickly just give some love to our listeners? And I'll just give you a flavor of their responses.
Yeah.
So one word take on the U.S. men's national team last night. Kevin Lynch is a word. Matt Sears, progress.
Okay.
Philip Trash, aptly named for what, and the only goal scored was a fluke. Steve Harmon, lucky. I don't think we were lucky. Josh Hinkle, equivocal. Snap me, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Giovanni Mann, such a fluke goal. Michael Antony, yawn. VAR is run by the Illuminati.
I don't think that's one word.
Unsustainable. Oscar Villaboas, better. Chris Wellhausen, boring. Flashy, unfinished. Jay Will, fledgling. Robert Rimmer, aimless. Christian Pollock, serviceable.
I would say that ran the gamut of pretty much every single possible, so it was flashy and boring.
People watch games and see different things. And also,
yeah, they really do.
Some people aren't always locked in when it's a friendly. They're half watching it.
Yeah, I totally get that. A couple of good notes here. Greg Berhalter improves to 3-0 as U.S. head coach. Bob Bradley is the only other coach in U.S. men's history to win his first three games.
Messi, yeah? You know Messi? Want to go play like Messi? Pop the beepy.
The U.S. also improves not just 3-0 under Bradley, but 3-0 to start its 2019 campaign, which is good. According to Elias, the last time the U.S. began a year with three straight wins was 2012, when they won their first four straight. So I guess
that's
it's all
till
good.
That's that until Tuesday night.
Yeah, and that's another thing Taylor said that I would tend to agree with. I do think we'll learn a little bit more Tuesday night, mainly because I don't expect Chile to just kind of dig their heels in the way that Ecuador did. They'll go forward, and they will try to score goals and play a little bit. And this will be kind of the first test for a lot of this you know, these Berhalter players and how they'll cope with that. So I'm looking forward to it. Has the U.S. given up a goal yet in these three games under Berhalter?
Don't think so.
I don't think they have, actually.
Good.
Yeah, it's better to do that than concede.
Oh, analysis.
So there you go. Do you have many other thoughts on last night's game? I really don't think that I do.
I'm just going through my notes, my very, very in-depth notes. I don't have a ton to say about it, except that I enjoyed what was an interesting little tactical showing inside the mind of Berhalter, what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
Nothing more than that, really.
The only other thing that I wanted to get in there is...
Oh, Weston McKennie. That's a note that I have in red here.
Yeah, the injury obviously was bad. I mean, the fact... I haven't seen yet today. They said a sprain last night.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what that means.
He's going for a scan today, I think.
Yeah. Even before that, I actually didn't think he played very well, to be honest. But I hope he's okay. I hope he's able to get back to Schalke and continue playing.
It was tricky for him, though. He was trying to get beyond a back line that was quite happily to be camped between the 18 and 25 yards out.
Yeah, and that was the only other guy that I wanted to mention was Pulisic. It was hard to really take much away from his game. I thought he was a part of the action a lot, but like you said, I think maybe some of the things that bogged down McKennie were also bogging down Pulisic. There wasn't a ton of space to work with.
Their defenders closed around him very quickly whenever he got the ball. There was a moment in the second half where he's got the ball and he's running and he goes to turn infield and suddenly he's just swarmed by yellow shirts.
Yeah. So there you go. That is our look at the U.S. and Ecuador. 1-0 it goes to the U.S. men. They'll be back in action Tuesday in Houston against Chile. We will, of course, do another show probably Wednesday to recap that.
I don't think it deserves a late night show, does it?
Come on. Well, what time does that game start?
Oh, the curtain has been pulled back. I don't know. What time's kickoff?
I mean,
maybe we save it for the summer and the Gold Cup, right?
Oh, yeah. No, don't try to paint me as somebody who doesn't want to come here and do the work. After every game of significance, the game starts at 8 o'clock on Tuesday.
Ah, yeah, okay. We don't need to.
So, I mean, it's a friendly.
Oh, JJ. God, I was joking.
Well, now I'm that guy who just doesn't care about people.
Don't worry. Next week's mailbag is going to make you feel much worse.
Oh. Why?
People got angry with us.
Well, I know people couldn't believe that I had the gall to refer to Manchester United, albeit jokingly, as Manchester's other club. I think I have identified the only fan base more sensitive than the Liverpool fan base, and it is the Manchester United fan
You're
base.
You're out of the frying pan and into the fire with this one, my friend. It's about both of us are actually up against the wall, against the firing squad.
What did we say?
Oh, we...
Give me a preview. Now I'm going to have to think about this.
Bandwagonism.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why, we're being called out as bandwagon fans?
Oh, yeah. One guy emails us and calls us out as bandwagon fans. Although I don't, right. I will deal with him next week. I don't quite think he understands what the term bandwagon means. Do you know what I mean? Like, guys, for anyone else who's going to chime in, a bandwagon is something that's happened at a moment and you just jump on and become a supporter.
I mean, look.
That's what happens.
How can anyone think that a fan who decided to become a fan of Leicester City of all clubs
during the
second half of their title-winning season is not a bandwagon?
Right, right, right.
I'm not saying that doesn't mean you're not a committed fan. I'm sure that, I forget the guy's name who emailed us, but I'm sure he's remained loyal to them and watches them every week. Like, yeah. I'm sure he's a great fan, but like, who are we kidding? The origin of your fandom is that of a bandwagon. It's like the textbook definition.
And we have a Columbus Crew fan who's upset that we reported what happened at Columbus.
Oh. You know what? It means people are listening.
His argument was wait until things get better, then report.
I mean, look, your team was leaving.
Let's not. We'll deal with it next week. Let's go on to Euro 2020.
Well, I have almost nothing to say about the Euro qualifying matches.
No, There wasn't many huge like matchups. There were some tasty friendlies. Serbia and Germany finished 1-1 the other day, and Leroy Sané was lucky he didn't have his leg broken in that game. There's a tackle on social media going around. That was as bad a tackle as you'll see. But Sané tweeted, he took to Instagram afterwards to say he was fine. So that's good. I suppose one of the standout results yesterday in actual qualifying was Kazakhstan beating Scotland 3-0. Now, Scotland haven't been great for a few years now. We get that. One of the whole original homes of football. But they had beaten Israel and they had beaten Albania in the Nations League. So there was, is it fair to say, a buzz around Scotland? Yeah, there was a buzz. And people expected more. They got trounced in Kazakhstan, who are ranked 117th, I believe.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So I think... I think there's a drop from Trainspotting that sums up this.
Doesn't it make you proud to be Scottish?
It's being Scottish!
I saw that. I mean, I didn't actually watch that game, but I was on Twitter. All of a sudden, people just started, like, kind of tweeting like crazy about what was happening there. Especially after the first two goals happened in such quick succession.
9 minutes. Yeah. It's not good. Yeah. And you know, with Andy Robertson and Alex McLeish back at the helm, who had been fairly successful before Scotland manager, there was a sense that things were turning around, but they are not.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I wanted to do, because I felt like we were a little too kind of casual in the way we made fun of the qualifying process for the European Championships.
Okay.
Afterwards, I was like, you know what? People actually, like, we just take for granted that maybe people do or don't care.
Yeah.
People might actually want to know how it goes down.
You're about to give everyone such a headache.
I'm not. Because here's the thing. It is every bit as complex as we kind of portrayed it to be.
Oh, yeah.
So I can't sit here. It would just be excruciating for me to sit here and explain it to everyone. So what I do have is a link to a website that actually does explain how qualifying will work for the European Championship. We will tweet that out. And if you are somebody who's interested, at CO Soccer Pod, you'll be able to find the link and you'll know how it all will work.
Yeah, that's fair. And also, it's not so much that this part isn't complicated. Like, regular qualifying, it's how the Nations League has been suddenly thrown and impacts this qualification campaign. Yeah. Okay, we'll put that out. Also, Eric Beck, this is one worth getting out of the way, seeing as Holland had a 4-0 win over Belarus yesterday. Eric kindly emailed us a link explaining the Holland-Netherlands difference. So the Netherlands consists of 12 provinces, but many people use Holland when talking about the Netherlands. But that's not quite correct. The two provinces of Noord and Zuid-Holland together are called Holland. The 12 provinces together are the Netherlands. The official name of the country is the Kingdom of the Netherlands. King Willem-Alexander is the king of the nation. Holland actually only means the two provinces of Noord-Holland and Zuid-Holland.
So how did this happen? If there's 12 provinces within the whole of the Netherlands.
Yeah.
So how come Holland, which only accounts for 2 of the 12, could become synonymous with the name of the entire country?
I don't know.
Well, we need to get to the bottom of this. This is unbelievable.
It's just happened.
This is unbelievable. All right. Well, I couldn't possibly
We have to call them the Netherlands from now on.
Yeah, no,
armed
right.
with this knowledge.
Or just with the Dutch.
Yeah.
Wow.
By the way, things have even got even more complicated for Declan Rice. I might as well give you a Rice update.
Okay. All right.
So the other day he did the social media with the English FA. You have to sit down, talk about your first call up, how proud you are. So he didn't negotiate this very well. He was asked about the call up and he goes, you know, I was delighted to be there with my dad. And he dropped a line that has irked many Irish people. You know, obviously, you can hear from my accent, I'm Irish. That has nothing to do with anything. You can have, I mean, it's just so ridiculous. There's many, many Republic of Ireland players who have English accents, who were,
right.
grew up in England. And
but he's not crazy for implying that one's accent is kind of a...
It's not the determining factor, you know, obviously. There's no obviously in it. Kevin Kilbane grew up in Preston with an English accent, still hasn't. Never considered himself anything other than Irish.
JJ.
Just like Mexican people who grow up on this side of the border.
All right, but in general, if someone walked in here right now, JJ, Andrew, what's up, y'all? Oh, I wouldn't need to say, like, he doesn't need to then say, obviously I'm from the South.
But
like, yeah,
he goes
I understand
on,
that.
He goes on then to say he played for the Irish youth teams. No, you didn't. You played for the U teams all the way up, and you played 3 senior caps just last summer. So he whitewashes over his whole Irish career. So that got on people's back.
Okay.
But you know what? We were going to get over it. We were going to get over it until the sleuths on social media dug into his Instagram. And when he was U17 player playing for the Irish team, he was talking, you know, in a message thread about their next game in some tournament. And he goes, I can't wait till we meet the English. And then with the comment below, up the Ra. Now, that is a comment that refers to the Irish Republican Army, a militant organization, Irish Freedom Fighters organization.
Hmm.
So this has landed him in hot water. He's now...
with the English, I would assume.
Right. So he straight away, it's another Instagram statement, blah, 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 blah. Now, I don't think you should kill him for saying something. You know, he was 15. And that phrase, since the Troubles are over in Northern Ireland, gets thrown about much more lightly than it did when things were, you know, when there was a conflict ongoing. But he's in huge trouble. And now there's a more, how shall we say, unkind element of the English fans. The same people who pick on Raheem Sterling and who are ultra-nationalists.
Okay.
And now they have this guy who has professed... even though he probably didn't mean anything by it, it was just a throwaway comment on Instagram, has professed, how would we say, I don't know, an adherence to a certain strain of Irish nationalism.
So he has some explaining to do, is what you're saying.
He did on Instagram, and I take him at his word on it, but now everybody is just basically putting up pictures and videos of Declan Rice and putting Irish rebel songs over the pictures.
Man. It is truly amazing how... social media, like, guys just unnecessarily put themselves in these positions. When you, like, if you have a kid one day, how are you going to police what they do on social media? You have to.
I wonder at some point, will social media reach a breaking point where it's, you know, it's just inhospitable and it's, people will say, we don't want to be on this. It's just too toxic.
Are you a Black Mirror guy?
I haven't seen it, no.
Oh, God. Of all people, seem like somebody that I think would really enjoy, because you're such a thinker. And like the show is just like, it's very like existential thinking and just like weird twists and mind Fs and stuff like
really?
That. I really think that you would like it. But they deal with like, you know, what road is social media headed down in one of these episodes.
I'm sure it's dystopian.
Yes and no simultaneously. I would like you to see it.
Yeah. So basically Declan has embroiled himself in another controversy, although he did it when he was 15. You can't hold it against him, but it's rubbed people the wrong way on both sides of the channel. Although it hasn't rubbed us the wrong way at all. We kind of think it's funny.
Well, there you go. That's pretty much all we have for you today on this Friday. I hope you have a very enjoyable weekend. I know for me it's going to be a lot of basketball viewing. I think Amanda is quietly annoyed with me because I think she believes that I watch too much sports to begin with. And then this time of year, I become a little bit of like
a recluse,
a TV tyrant.
Yeah.
Because, like, she just simply doesn't want to watch any of this. And so,
no, she texted me. She said she'll be watching Ireland v. Gibraltar on ESPN+.
But, like, I'm talking about college basketball. Like, this is the one time of year she'll accept during the season when I'm like, you know, Syracuse is playing tonight, even if it's like a school that they're playing against that's not really like a big program. She'll understand, okay, it's Syracuse. It's harder for me to get away with trying to justify like, hey, you know, Belmont is playing in the play-in game tonight. I really should be watching that. Like, so I think
but
she's
Marquette is on.
I think she's had it with me. So I think I need some damage control. I think I need to just watch games on my computer for tonight and let her watch whatever she wants. I think that's a
nice compromise. Are you going to put the headphones in? You should put the headphones in.
Yeah, one ear. I'll put it in because I have, you know, I've got like the Apple earbuds. So one ear, other ear, I can kind of pay attention to everything going on. I think
that's a nice compromise, and yeah. I think it's the thing that's going to save your marriage.
it's always just on thin ice, isn't it? Well, hey, this was fun, man. I hope you have a nice weekend. I believe you're marching in your 17th St. Patrick's Day parade this weekend, so that should be fun, of course.
Bay Ridge St. Patrick's Day parade. It's the final parade.
Oh, you actually are.
I'm paraded out. Yeah, I will be downing. I'm going to shave the beard as well afterwards.
Why?
There was some comments.
Not from me. I think you look great. Anyway, have fun doing that. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.